Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is July 28th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotorVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by going to MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. So we're going to start the call a little differently today than we usually do because we are honored to have a guest, and I don't want to take away any time from our guest today. I would ask everybody if there's any background noise to please be aware of that and mute your phones. Of course, you can always unmute if you have any questions or comments. But I wanted to welcome Jeremy Pollock today, who is the Director of Government, that's the word I'm having trouble with, Jeremy. The Director of Government Affairs. He actually came on after the passing of Dave Loveday. So he came on in 2021. Prior to WQA, and Jeremy has actually worked with WQA and other organizations for years and years. Prior to that, he was the manager of federal and global government affairs for the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, also known as ASHRAE, where he was the chief liaison for 50,000 members to Congress and federal agencies. Jeremy was first introduced to WQA as a consultant a number of years ago when he was at the firm Gephardt Government Affairs. The Gephardt Group is the lobbying group that WQA uses to help represent our interest in the industry. So he was there during that time. He helped plan WQA's very first advocacy fly-in to D.C.
Mike Ewell.
So during that time, Jeremy really helped coordinate the meetings that members of WQA have when we go to D.C. So he was actually perfect for this role. Jeremy, I want to thank you very much. I know it was short notice, and I want to thank you very much for coming and joining us today. And I'm hoping to, you know, to mostly focus on the Healthy Act. What is the official name of the bill that you usually are, that WQA is pretty active in helping get through Congress? Actually, you know what? I'm going to shut up and just let you talk about what that told you I was going to botch up your introduction, and hopefully I didn't do it too badly there. Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks for having me today. It's always a pleasure to speak to our members and update them on where we're at with increasing advocacy. So I appreciate that introduction. And I just want to take a quick step back for a moment because WQA has put out their strategic plan and goals for 2022 through 2024. And so these goals focus on three things. One, advancing knowledge and professionalism in the industry. The second goal is increasing advocacy, which I'll be speaking about today. And then goal three, which is driving public awareness and knowledge. And of course, all of these are related and benefit the industry as a whole, but also each of you who work in the industry and are really the boots on the ground. So to just provide a little bit of background on the Healthy H2O Act, this is part of an initiative we've been working on for a while. This came out of a task force called the Clean Water for All Task Force at WQA with a number of different groups whose goal was to work directly with policymakers to craft legislation that will help provide safe drinking water to all Americans who traditionally have been overlooked by federal and state funding. And this is only possible because of work like my predecessor Dave Loveday and several of our members who've been engaged over the years. Especially when it comes to the water treatment industry, if you had asked maybe 5 or 10 years ago, some folks, regulators, policymakers might have been familiar with us, but they haven't really accepted us necessarily as a solution at the time. And so Dave was great of working with me and several others to, one, build visibility, but then, two, also build credibility over time. And we've really seen a shift where policymakers have now come to us asking us for our opinion or for our expertise, and it's been able to make us a little bit more proactive instead of reactive. And that's really where this initiative comes from, since we've seen firsthand how several communities in the United States do not have safe drinking water, something that we have taken for granted for a number of years. So this Clean Water for All Task Force, this longstanding effort really culminated in the introduction of a bill. The full name is the Healthy Drinking Water Affordability Act, but for short, we call it the Healthy H2O Act. And the bill numbers are Senate Bill 4081 and House Bill 8018. This has been introduced in both the U.S. House and Senate, and it's bipartisan, something you don't see very much nowadays, but we have several Republicans, Democrats, and even an independent on the bill. And so this task force through WQA is really essential in workshopping this legislative language and also getting support from other organizations. So to talk about the bill specifically, the legislation has been sponsored by Representative Shelley Pingree of Maine, David Rausser of North Carolina, and Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. It would authorize a new grant program at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which has a rural development agency under it, and would cover the cost for water quality testing. And then if it shows a health contaminant, regulated or unregulated, a grant can be applied to purchase, install, and maintain a point-of-use or point-of-entry water filtration product that is certified by an ANSI-accredited body. Assistance from this grant program would go directly to individuals, and what I think is really unique here, even renters, licensed child care facilities, nonprofits, local government, and it's really focusing those in rural communities, so communities of 10,000 or less, and those especially who are on well water, who at this time often don't receive any assistance from the state, their county, their city, or the federal government. And as you know, are experiencing the same issues that many Americans in urban areas experience with a fraction of the cost to solve these issues. So in addition to WQA, we have more than 20 organizations, close to 30 organizations now supporting this bill. This includes the National Groundwater Association, the Water Council, NSF International, IAPMO, the American Supply Association, Water Systems Council, and a number of other groups. We have a full list on our website. So the other unique part about this bill I mentioned is it applies to regulated and unregulated contaminants. And that's because we often know that there's health contaminants out there that regulations have not caught up to. And why wait for something to completely impact your health or for some arbitrary deadlines before you react? A good example of this is PFAS, something that we've known for years can be harmful to your health. And so that's why we crafted this legislation that if you find, for example, PFAS in your water, especially in these rural communities, you can get a water filtration system today. The other aspect of this is that you don't need to necessarily wait for a maximum contaminant level or action level. Lead is an example I'll use here, where we really know, especially when it comes to children, you want as close to zero parts per billion of lead in your water. Health advisory is really at 5 parts per billion, but the action level is already up to 15 parts per billion before any action is really taken. And so there's a huge gap there between when it impacts your health and when actually we see those around you take action. And so we wanted to make sure that homes, like I said, renters, nonprofits, communities can react to removing these health-based contaminants from their drinking water before it has a huge impact on their health. Just in general with government affairs, I want to talk about some strategies for outreach and how to get involved with this legislation. If you're a member of WQA, you've probably seen a few emails from me or the Government Affairs Department this week and last week. We are doing a grassroots letter campaign, and this is very easy. You click on a button, you put in your address, and it automatically will email your federal representatives on your behalf. You can amend the letter that we've drafted for you, but they definitely need to hear from you why this legislation is important, and so I encourage all of you to get involved. But there's several other issues that we are working on and several other strategies for outreach. You can do meetings at the national, state, local government level. Even when it comes to meeting with federal representatives, you don't need to be in Washington, D.C. One of the silver linings of the pandemic is that you can do a virtual meeting or a conference call, and me and my team would be happy to do the research for you, schedule that meeting, do a training with you, attend that meeting with you, make it as easy as possible. But you can also meet with them in their state or district office. We have a great month coming up here in August where a lot of federal representatives will be back for what we call the summer recess. Often they take this time to campaign or tour the district. So it's a great time to meet with their state and local offices and really talk to them about what you do each day. You can also invite them to do a site visit at one of your facilities. You can also invite them to maybe an event if you're hosting a yearly barbecue, or maybe you're doing something for World Water Week. These are other great opportunities. Also just getting involved locally when it comes to hearings, writing letters to officials, as I already mentioned, but also working with other groups. And so we've seen a number of this. And the reason why this is so important is because when it comes to crafting policy, often U.S. governors, state legislators, there's over 7,000 of them in the United States, even when it comes to Congress where there's 500 plus representatives, there's very, very few of them that have a specific backing in the water treatment industry. When it comes to governors, for example, and this is kind of true across the board with politics, you have about 19 who have just been in public service, 16 who have a background in business, 8 in law, 5 when it comes to just education, and then 2 with engineering background. And maybe yes, maybe not, they know a little bit about our industry, but often their expertise stems in something else. And they're the ones who are crafting policy that will impact drinking water across the U.S., but also your business. So to make sure that regulations and legislation has good information and turns into good policy, they need to hear from you because you're the ones who are the boots on the ground and work on this every day and understand this. And they want to hear from you. Most policymakers might not know directly, for example, what point of use or point of entry is, but explaining that to them, they'll often know that they probably have a system themselves, and it makes it a little bit easier for them to understand why this is a solution that is readily deployable and easily used. And we need to explain how important this is to our communities and the conversations that you're having with their constituents or residents across the U.S. or others who are working in the industry. And I know I talked a little bit about what's going on federally, but just to talk about some legislative trends at the state level, I think this is really important. A couple years ago, we were looking at close to triple digits in legislation. Last year, or 2 years ago, we were about 250. Last year, we were around 300. We're 7 months into this year, and we're already tracking 340 bills across the U.S., and that's with several state legislators who were not in session this year, including Texas. So we're seeing a high uptick as there's been an emphasis on drinking water across the U.S. and quality, especially as we're more focused on public health issues, which this is being considered as. 30% of those bills are focused on lead, with another 16% of that on schools. PFAS has raised as a percentage from the teens to 23% of those bills. We're also seeing a lot with well water and then also extended producer responsibility, which can impact manufacturers as well. And so now is a really important time because there's a lot of good intention here by legislators, but if they don't hear from you, they won't have the right expertise to make those good intentions into good policy. So I just want to talk quickly about how the WQA can help you. We've already talked about some of those strategies. And I just want to plug in right here that we have a generic Gov Affairs email. So if you don't know exactly where to get started, please email this. It's called govaffairs@wqa.org. Again, that is govaffairs@wqa.org. And just some of the association benefits is if you're dealing with an issue, there's often another member who's dealing with a similar issue, especially when it comes to a regulation. We're here to unite the industry. And sometimes you might not want to engage as a company, and we can engage as a nonprofit association and really unite others as part of that mission. We do monthly bills lists and tracking and can make those resources available to you. And we also develop advocacy materials and handouts. So if there's an issue that I have not mentioned today, we can pull together materials for you. And normally if you're experiencing something, someone else is elsewhere. An example of that is when years ago in Southern California, we saw some issues with regulators talking about chloride bans and water softening. So we put together a whole chloride handbook. And now we're seeing similar issues pop up in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and we're educating them on how to optimize water softening systems. So that handbook is supposed to serve as a guide to our members. And so we often can learn and identify threats to the industry early on when we all work together. Something new that we brought on since I've started at WQA is a monthly newsletter. It's a what we call a government affairs update. It goes out the first Monday of each month, so there will be one this coming Monday. And what we know you're all very busy, but it's a two-minute read-through, kind of CEO level overview of what's going on as far as W2A engagement. What do I need to know about what's going on at the federal level? You know, has the EPA issued any rulemakings we need to comment on? Are there any new grant programs? What legislation has been introduced? And then what's also going on at the state level or local level that I can get involved with? And part of that has our bills list that has a really cool interactive map where you can kind of hover over a different state. You can hover over issue areas as well and look at legislation that way. In addition to that, me and my colleagues are happy to provide government outreach trainings, and we can do this for a specific issue or just generally of how to advocate for what you do each day and prepare you for meetings. We can work with you on letters related to WQA's public policy priorities. We just did one to a planning board in Minnesota where we had a big win. We can help with testimony and comments, especially when it comes to hearings and public forums. And so I know I threw a lot of information out there. So I'll pause there just to see if you have any questions. Happy to provide more information on any of these initiatives, or also just generally share why government outreach is so important to you and your business.
Yeah.
I'll pause there. So, thank you.
So Jeremy, I just wanted to let everybody, and thank you very much. You're always so thorough, and I appreciate everything you're saying, but I just want to take a moment to, you know, for a lot of the people on this call, not everybody, but, you know, a lot of them are at the ground level. They're in the home. They're, you know, in sales or and so I think one of the things that I want to just emphasize that you said, and that actually Dave and the work that, you know, I've been helping with, thanks to some of your efforts, you know, the DC fly-ins and stuff like that. One of the things that I came to realize is that the primary purpose of any association is for basically advocacy, legislative influence, if you will. So making sure that we are able to represent, you know, that we are able to, exactly what you said. I mean, that the people there making the laws, they don't really know that much about our industry. So when you have an association, when you think of any association anywhere, that's their primary goal is to be there to advocate on behalf of the industry. And so it becomes, you know, and the more membership you have, the more involvement of membership that you have, the stronger voice you have when you're speaking to these legislators, because we vote, right? We're members that vote. So they are more willing to listen to us. And when we talk about, I think that's really important, because a lot of times I remember when I first came in the industry and I would hear a presentation like the one you just gave, and I'd say, yeah, but how does that, okay, so really I'm a sales guy and I'm, you know, all I'm doing is going into the home. How am I going to actually make a difference at these, you know, these top level things? Aren't these my, you know, my boss's responsibility? You know, isn't this the company that I work for? Isn't it their responsibility? How would you address if, you know, you have somebody in the industry who day to day, you know, is just a, and I don't mean just, you know, but they're out there just as a sales professional, or maybe they're in the office, right? Or, you know, how would you answer that question if it's posed?
So, I mean, there's several ways to get started. So let me just kind of emphasize the importance of this, and I can provide a couple of examples where we've been reactive, which, you know, once you find out about an issue, it's often too late to engage. And so I'll provide an example in that for a moment. But yeah, especially those who are going into the homes, you understand more than anyone the issues that are plaguing us today. And you're not really in this industry unless you're passionate about it. I've met several of our members, and you're there to make an impact and help people every day. And so it doesn't happen overnight, building connections with these policymakers. And this is where my team comes in. We will make it as easy as possible for you. Some of those, you know, we'll set up a one-on-one meeting with you. You know, we'll look into who makes sense to meet with. But also just raising awareness of the industry as a whole is good from a business perspective. Let me just talk about where in the past where we haven't been as engaged and where it's been impacting the industry. Delaware is an example. We had a discharge issue there. For close to a decade, there was all of a sudden just a restriction on the discharge of water softeners into septic tanks. You can have a regulation like that where overnight just impacts you and your business and the industry as a whole, especially sales. And it becomes a lot harder of something to overturn or reverse once it becomes law. We've become a lot better at reacting to this. The big win I mentioned recently was in Minnesota, where a plumbing board was going to make a recommendation to require an additional bypass for water filtration products, despite the fact that water filtration products already had one built in. And we were able to engage with them. We sent in a letter. We caught this early on. And then they ended up voting in our favor 7-0. And so this is just some of the power that comes with advocacy and then building these relationships over time. And often, like, you don't see this business impact until you have an issue, like I said. And that's the situation you don't want to be in. You've already want to have these relationships. You want to be that go-to resource. Where it can actually help drive sales and be really important. And we have already talked about the Healthy H2O Act, which will be a grant program. But California, a state where we've repaired our relationship with, where they haven't really looked to our industry in the past. Now they kind of come to us, especially when they look to solutions for drought. Years ago, from our work with nonprofits and disadvantaged communities, a bill was introduced and became law called the California Safer Program. And this shows how much they believe in us. There's $130 million a year to increase access to safe drinking water in California, and that's because they declared safe drinking water a human right. And this includes point-of-use or point-of-entry technology that can be deployed as part of this program. It's $130 million for 10 years. So there's a lot that can be done as we see governments react to this ongoing challenge. And we want to see this done in a safe, cost-effective way, but also effective. Really the benefit of our industry, and you know this, as much as the government has taken a holistic approach, and we want to just turn on our tap and have access to drinking water. I mean, I want to turn on my tap and just drink a cup of water. I know that's ideal, but it's not the reality of the situation. We are the ones who have these solutions that can be done on a home-by-home basis or community-by-community basis, direct to the specific contaminant in your drinking water. And so hopefully that answers your question of just a couple of examples of why it's important to get involved, even if you think it doesn't impact you right now in this very moment. But again, please just contact us at govaffairs@wqa.org. We can talk about how do you get involved with city council? How do you meet with your state legislator? How does that typical meeting go? And we have some one-pagers even that are step-by-step of what that agenda even looks like. And let me tell you, I hear all the time, well, this meeting seems very daunting. I'm kind of nervous. I'm just going to sit back and listen to this first one. I would say almost every single time I've done this meeting with one of our members, they walk out saying, this was the easiest thing I've ever done. I'm just talking about what I do each day. And it's that simple because you are the experts.
So one of the things that's nice about the list, you listed, you know, the hundreds of bills that WQA is kind of monitoring right now. If those of you on the call, if you are interested, they're actually broken down and categorized by state as well. So it's pretty easy to find if you look at where you're at and you can go and see where, you know, what is actively moving through in your state and just take a look at them and see if there's anything that would have an impact that you might want to get involved with. Jeremy, one of the things that I love is you know, just how much of a difference we have seen. I mean, you helped organize, that's where I met you, you know, in the DC fly-ins, you helped organize those first ones. It was interesting, the first time I went to DC, nobody knew who we were. Nobody knew about us. There were only one or two people that we spoke to that knew anything about PFAS, you know, and now when we go, they know exactly who we are. I mean, you want to speak to that just for a minute, you know, just the difference you have seen in the last few years as you've been involved with it. You know, what's the reception been like?
And a lot of this is due to my predecessor, Dave Loveday. He had this vision for WQA. And I think when he hired Gephardt Government Affairs, it was the first time really anyone in the water treatment industry had kind of federal representatives. And this was before the Flint water crisis, which really served as a catalyst. And as a native Californian, he brought me on to help as drought was kind of the big issue at the time. And like I said, often these staffers who work for these members, they're a mile wide and an inch deep. They might have a portfolio of 6 or 7 issues. So they might have ag, environment, immigration, healthcare. And then, of course, like under environment, they might have electric vehicles, you know, electrification, buildings, and then drinking water is a portion of that. And maybe they understand municipalities, but maybe not necessarily our technology. So it's extremely important to go in there year in, year out and build that rapport. It's about showing face, right? And like I said, they want to hear from you. PFAS is a really interesting example. So the Flint water crisis, I think, really opened up a lot of people's eyes, in addition to the pandemic, about the kind of public health side of drinking water and something that we've just taken for granted for years. And the one thing that we really harped on was it's not just Flint and it's not just lead. There's, depending on where you are, it's nitrates, it's arsenic, but of course also PFAS, something that we knew is not safe to have in our drinking water. So it's extremely important to go in there year in, year out and build these relationships. Again, I said this doesn't happen overnight. And it was really when we started doing that first line about visibility. It's the same thing in the state capitals. We've done, you know, days in Sacramento and Austin and Tallahassee, and we hope next year as things are switching a little bit back more to in-person that we can get those going again. So I encourage you to, if you haven't attended before, I know it can be a little bit scary and daunting, but I promise you these will be easy. You get to meet your fellow members. And it's really fun to talk about exactly what you do. But I'm happy to expand on all of that. I don't know how much time we have today, so I don't want to take too long going into the details, but happy to expand more.
Well, we have about three or four minutes left. And I wanted to just open it up, see if there was anybody that had a question for you besides me. Anybody else have a question for Jeremy?
Yeah, this is Elaine in California. I'm curious how members get information about these bills or just like the you know, Safe Water Act and how you access funds. Is it an RFP or how does that work?
Right. So we, on our website, you can go to a government affairs tab and we have several separate pages, including some for California, like AB 100 and other legislation that might be impacting you or your business. We also have that newsletter that I said is going to go out on Monday. If you're not on that, shoot me an email. Again, govaffairs@wqa.org. That will go to my whole team just to make sure that we're on it. And part of that is we often provide summaries on legislation, and it also includes that bills list. But if you want to access the bills list at any time, that is always on our website for our members. And like I said, it's broken down by state, but we also have a federal section as well. And part of that newsletter, we'll talk about where other members have engaged. We'll highlight rulemakings or when WQA has commented. But even if you have specific questions, you know, hey, I heard about, you know, the California Water Resources Board Control Board is doing this, or the EPA is doing this. Is WQA doing anything, or should we be doing anything? We're always happy to advise on that. And we also have a couple different task force on these issues. So the best way to keep informed would be that newsletter or just going to our website, which we're in the middle of rebranding to make it a little bit more user accessible. And I can forward our last couple ones to you as well.
So, Jeremy, I will add that email to the comments section of this podcast, and also just how to get in touch with the govaffairs@wqa.org. I'll put on the website, and I can probably put a link directly to that that list as well. So
awesome.
So that takes us to the end of our half hour. I just appreciate so much your leadership and of, you know, you and the team. You had some big shoes to fill when you stepped into this role, and I think you're doing so fabulously. So thank you very much for your effort, your tenacity, just the information there, and again for joining us this morning. I really, when Jen said that you might be able to do that, I was like, yes, that would be great, because I think this is so critically important. So very much appreciate it. So everybody else, thank you also for attending. We will talk to you next week, if not before. So be safe, everybody. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.